In a world with custom calls, custom shotguns, and custom shotgun shells, why stop there? Why not custom decoy rigs made to hunt the way you hunt? From the jerk cords for the flooded timbers of Arkansas, to the long line for the diver hunts of the Great Lakes, to the Texas rigs for the crawfish ponds of Louisiana and the rice fields of the Sacramento Valley. At A-Bear's Custom Decoy Rigs, LLC, they have the rig for you. From their coated cable to their patent tangle-free monofilament rigs to their endless weight, shapes, and sizes, they have what you're looking for. Find them at www.abearcustomdecoyrigs.com or find them on their Facebook page. Remember, get the rig for the way you hunt. Flyway Connections is also brought to you by DOW Outfitters. DOW is based out of Walnut Ridge, Arkansas, specializing in hunts in flooded agricultural fields. They can also accommodate any group, whether it's a hunting trip with a family, corporation group, or buddies just going on a fun getaway trip. When you book a trip with DOW, you are guaranteed hardworking, knowledgeable guides, up-to-date clean lodging, and positive attitudes from all their employees. DOW also takes pride in working with nonprofit organizations. If you're looking to book a hunt that includes great times and even better people, call Dustin Wilbanks at 770-833-2708 or contact them at their Facebook page at DOW Outfitters. While you're there, go ahead and give them a like and follow to stay tuned and see what's going on during the season. You can also tune in to the action on Instagram at DOW Outfitters.
Welcome back, everybody, to another show of Flyway Connections. Like always, my name is Chris. I'm here with Joe. Joe.
Hey, how y'all doing today? So big, big episode. We have a good buddy of ours, Matt Masters, one of the guides over at DOW Outfitters. I met him this year, and I mean, just like how I met Sharp, we hit it off and we became best friends. Hey, Matt, how you doing today?
Good.
Yeah. Do you tell us, you know, for the viewers, I know I called you up earlier this week, and Matt, dude, I miss duck hunting already.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, I miss it. With the season we've had, dude, I miss it already.
Man, I've spent the last 2 days working on the new duck trailer, and that's just, that's it. I mean, yeah. There ain't much sitting there waiting.
Hey, Chris, yeah, he sent me pictures of it. The thing's fancy. Rhino line bottoms. Rhino line bottom. He blow torched the wood on the sides.
So nice.
It's all rustic looking. Then he varnished it. It's to seal it. It looks sharp. It almost looks like a little man cave.
Matt talked about it right before you got on. I think Joe was taking a shit or something, but he talked about the duct depression. So I got to check this out.
Yeah. So, hey, Matt, for the viewers, hey, let them know where you're from and kind of where you cut your teeth duck hunting.
All right. I'm from a town called Statham, Georgia. We're about an hour and 15 minutes east of Atlanta. Dude, as far as duck hunting, it's kind of weird out here. Either you start off, you know, shooting wood ducks as a kid with family, you know, kind of like a lot of y'all Louisiana guys are. Or guys like me, I didn't duck hunt. I got some friends that got me into it when I was probably 12 or 13. And it was, you know, one of those things like it does to a lot of different people. As soon as, you know, I shot my first few wood ducks and found out I could play around in the swamp, I went nuts with it. You know, obviously shot wood ducks for years. Around here, we get a few big ducks, not many, but we have resident honkers. And that's what caught my attention originally, because it was a bird I could call at and truly work. I know Joe's big on calling it the wood ducks, but so honkers kind of got me. And that led me to Texas. You know, I fell in love with chasing birds out there, which is always. Everybody goes to Arkansas, figure out you can chase mallards in Arkansas, and then It's been every year. I'd say every year since I was 16, I spent at least a couple weeks, if not more, you know, if not almost the majority of the season, not in the state of Georgia. And I was fortunate enough to get offered a job and, you know, went with it and fell in love with it. And, you know, now my wife probably hates it, but our life is scheduled around 60 days a year.
Hey, it's addicting. I tell my wife, hey, at least it ain't crack, right?
It's always me.
Cheaper.
Crack is cheaper.
So I think it's kind of cool that you're being from Georgia and you don't hear many guys from the South talk about how they fell in love with Canada goose hunting. And, you know, people forget, like, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia, you guys have, you know, when I was out there, I live, you know, everyone knows I lived a while in North Carolina. There was a real good population of resident geese out there.
Yeah, we call them golf course geese.
But
yeah.
What was it? What's the limit for geese out there for the big five. Canadas?
Five a bird. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know, me and you've talked, you've got some, you guys do a lot of banding out there. So, it's a pretty good opportunity to kill a band.
Yeah. So where I'm at, so really Georgia doesn't do a whole lot of banding, but South Carolina does. And where I'm at, I'm pretty central to a lot of the water, you know, in Northeast Georgia. So it's about an hour and a half to four different lakes. And Clark's Hill, which is a massive lake that borders us in South Carolina, they do a huge banding operation out there. So like early goose, we'll see a bunch of bands out that way. I say a bunch, you know, I haven't killed a pile. I think we killed four or five during early goose this year, which, you know, for a state, you're not supposed to kill birds. And, you know, you go kill four or five bands and, you know, we probably hunted 4 or 5 days of early goose and killed 20, 30, 40 birds, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, heck, 4 days and you kill five bands out of 20.
Yeah.
That's not a bad.
That's not bad at all.
It wasn't bad. You know, we're pretty fortunate. Got some friends that are, you know, we do a lot of public land, but also we've got a few friends that are farmers down around some big lakes. And if you can find the field, it's, you know, they're resident birds, so obviously they're smart. They know what's going on. They have for years. But if you can get in the field that they want to be in, you know, some Georgia hunts can be really good as long as you can get in the field that they want to be in.
Yeah. It's funny that people are like, oh, those are just dumb park geese or just dumb golf course geese. But, you know, some of those resident birds are the smartest ones, you know, smartest ones around.
Oh, yeah. It's a stealth, just like when you get stealth migratory birds. Once they've been in town for a little while, they figure it out pretty quick that if I go anywhere near that area, I get shot at, you know. So it's kind of the same thing. They're stealth because they're here all the time. They figure it out.
Yeah.
So outside of, I know you talked a little bit about Texas, Arkansas, Georgia, Louisiana, maybe outside of those states, what other states have you actually branched out and hunted in?
For waterfowl, that's pretty much it. Everything's been in the South. Going back to Canada is one of my dreams. I'm hoping to make in the next couple of years is I want to hunt upstate New York.
Have you hunted up in Canada yet or not yet?
No, never been. It's always been in the South. You know, I've chased deer in a few different places. You know, my wife's family, they've got a farm out in Ohio and some property up in Michigan and stuff like that. But I haven't had the chance to waterfowl hunt in them. You know, the last couple of years, you know, as Joe knows, you get to guide and there's not a whole lot of places you can. There's not enough time. Not really places. There's not enough time to do anything. This year I guided, I don't know, 50 some odd days of the season. So, I mean, the other ones were spent holidays with the family. It wasn't like you know, I was really hunting or traveling. So.
Yeah. What's cool about you is, and not unlike a lot of the guys we had on the show before, you're a big diver hunter.
I am. I love them.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of guys don't. You know, that's one area of the podcast that we don't. You know, we haven't really talked a lot about. I mean, me and Chris kill a lot of divers down here in Louisiana, but it's kind of, we're killing divers no different than we're killing the puddle ducks. I mean, they're just in the marsh that come in. But you actually target them on the big lakes and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's kind of funny you say that too, because the majority of the puddle ducks, like migrating puddle ducks that we kill here, if I hunt Georgia, I kill them over a diver spread. They eat up those big white and black, you know, spreads. So, yeah, for me, I love the divers personally. But, you know, kind of like I tell everybody, I do love the divers. I guide for puddle ducks.
Yeah.
But
and geese.
Also, my love for the divers came because they were what we had. You know, maybe if I had green heads in the timber every day growing up, I would have been a mallard purist. But, you know, I had bluebills and redheads on the big. So, yeah, I do. I love the divers, and I know y'all see a ton of them down there, but it's, I could tell everybody, cans and bluebills, they're hard to beat.
Yeah, cans, bluebills. I mean, I like redheads, ringnecks as well.
Oh, yeah.
The ringnecks, yeah.
Yeah.
A ringer beat, and to me, it's as wild as people say it. You know, you can call a ringer a diver, and I get it, they are, but that's as close as you get to a puddle duck. I mean, is anything else?
Chris,
they're just
over in Texas. Mm-hmm. Shoots them on small ponds.
Yeah, we had some farm tanks. It's just all over. And man, one year it was insane how much we beat them down. Like just on some farm tanks out there. And there's a couple tanks that we.
This has been not last year, probably 4 years ago. We shot a five man, and it was a mixed bag of ducks, but I want to say it was at least 18 ringnecks in a rice field in Stuttgart.
Really?
Yes. Nice. In a rice field. And I mean, be honest with you, I know I hate to say this because I'm a guide and we're supposed to be able to identify birds, but the first group I could have bet money on, they were teal when they dove in. Like,
you know what? That sometimes it's not like all, it's ringnecks. Mm-hmm. Ringnecks will come in, and especially early in the morning, they'll come in, they'll start banking around.
Wadded up and banking around.
Yeah, banking around just like teal.
Yep.
That's exactly what they did on that tank, those tanks we were hunting at them. Yeah. And to be honest, you said the teal thing. That's exactly what I thought, because it was so like, the fog was coming up. I could barely tell. I was like, oh, those are teal. We hit them. I was like, well, I don't know what the hell the birds are then.
Dude, they react to a mallard call just like anything else. I mean, and like I said, they're a diver that, to me, like we go down to South Georgia a lot. Got a friend that he owns No Limit Waterfowl down on Seminole. And Driscoll runs great operation, and they kill cans, and that's literally, it's a trip just to kill cans. That's all they do.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously I'll go down there and hunt a pretty decent amount. This is the first year I haven't made it down there in a few years. And we don't kill the ringers on big water.
Really?
Nope. You won't see them. You go kill cans, go kill bluebills, redheads, pintails, teal, all over the diver spread. You want to kill the ringers, go back to what looks like a woody hole in a slough. And that's where you bang on your ringnecks.
Really? That's interesting.
They're in the back pothole sloughs, and it's wild to me, because, you know, like everybody says,
yeah.
You just don't see them in the big.
I wonder if it has to do with like what they're eating. Because, like, Chris, you said the reason they're in those tanks was because of slugs or snails
there. Yeah, they're eating the little slugs in there. So there wasn't a lot of there's acorns here and there, but they're eating those slugs. To be honest, to tell you the truth, the only time I see like ringnecks like that is down in the marsh, Louisiana, or here in them tanks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now you think we don't see many, Well, I can't say that because Miller's Lake, which is a private duck club lake, I've shot a lot of rednecks on. But like going back to Catahoula, where, I mean, that's our Lake Seminole when it comes to the canvasback.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see many ringers on there. I mean, we've killed them, but it's not like, you know, in a big plethora. Yeah, it's not big. Yeah. I don't know if the canvasbacks just bully them out or whatnot.
Maybe.
But yeah, a lot of cans, pintails, mallards, teal, and ruddy ducks. Dude,
yeah.
If you want to go beat down on some ruddy duck, kill your two canvasbacks and kill four ruddy ducks, dude, Catahoula Lake's your spot.
Yeah, I'm telling you. I think I told you about it. You know, we got Clark's Hill here up at the house. It used to be covered in hydrilla.
Yeah.
And they sprayed the lake and killed it off. But before they sprayed the lake, I mean, it was every hole had, I mean, massive rafts of ruddy ducks. And they'd be here long. They'd get here like the week before season opened, and they'd be here till February.
You know, ruddy ducks are like coots. I never see them migrate. How do I? It's like they teleport there. You don't see them. Like, oh, dude, look at all the coots in the air. You know, like you said, I don't know how they get here.
This year is the first year I've ever had somebody shoot a coot coming into the spread. I'm talking about in the middle of a rice field, mid-morning, somebody asked me what that was. Here come this coot, cupped up like a duck.
Yeah.
I mean, just floating into the spread. And I was like, and they killed it. And I was like, shoot it. It's a coot. You can kill it. And they killed it. And, I was sitting there thinking, I told him, I was like, I've never seen a coot fly into this. I've seen them like halfway run, you know, run across the top of the water or whatever they do. But I've never seen one like cupped up actually fly over land.
In a Lacassine, we'll get them like that. Chris loves to, I tell Chris, I'm like, hey, listen.
Yeah, I'll slam.
Yeah, he'll slam. I'm like, yeah, 10 o'clock. If 10 o'clock dang, we're done, you can shoot all the coots you want. But, you know, Chris, there'll be two, you know, two gadwall cupped in coming in. There's a, you know, there's a freaking coot scooting off, Chris. Damn.
But it's crazy you say that because I mean, honestly, I can't tell you. I've seen them, you know, Joe, when they'll come in the marsh and they'll just splash in or do whatever and they'll mess around with each other. I've seen them do that, but I've never cupped up or anything like that.
Yeah, they'll fly in and they'll kind of pass shoot us.
Yeah.
I've never seen them land in the decoys. They usually,
I'm telling you, dude,
come, you know, go up about 20 yards, land, and then they'll turn around and swim in.
Joe knows it. The 160.
Oh,
cupped up in the decoys. No water around us at all. I don't know where that thing flew from. Decoys in the 160. And I was like, oh my God, it's a coot. Somebody kill it.
Somebody, but, that was like Jace. Jace, like, I want a coot so bad. I was like, bro.
Man, he was so mad. I sent him a picture and he was like, where did you just kill that? And I was like, dude, 160. And he's like, damn, I want to. I think he was the only guy we had this year not to kill one.
Lane Farm 160. I'm telling you.
Yeah. But I'm done. I don't know why I go anywhere else.
Yeah. Hey, if you're hard up, you go to those two. Hey, they shall prevail.
Yeah. That's all you got to do.
Yeah. They shall. So for the viewers, we're talking about, DLW Outfitters. I mean, everyone knows they're a big supporter of the show. Great guy. Sharp, you know, guided for him. Me and Matt guided for him this year. I was just up there for early spec. Matt grinded it all out in Louisiana, in Arkansas. But, dude, that's where I met Matt. And that's kind of where you started off your season at this year, right?
Yep.
Yeah. You know, we're fortunate enough, me and Chris down here in the South in Texas and Louisiana, we, you know, our season kind of starts off with teal, but it, you know, it was nice kind of, you know, transition almost three phases this year of waterfowl, teal, the specs, and then, you know, working the big duck. Was that the first time you've ever targeted specs like that?
Yeah. This year was the first year. Well, yeah, early spec was the first time I truly targeted just them. You know, I've been hunting Arkansas since I was probably 17, 18. So what, God, how old am I? That's right, 11 years. And we've killed specs over the year. I gotta tell everybody, we didn't really hunt them. And even when I would take people out there, you know, it always worked out. I had guys that wanted to kill ducks, and that's what we did for the longest time. And then, you know, this year, obviously Dustin wanted me to come, you know, dive into the spec game a little more. Which, you know, thank God he did, seeing that there for a little while, we didn't have ducks. So
yeah,
at least I scratched away and learned a little bit about specs before we got into season and didn't have ducks. So I had to kill specs to keep, you know, keep clients happy.
Yeah. What do you think about targeting them specs?
Dude, I enjoyed it. To me, and you know, I understand it's not the same as Canada's by any means. But to me, the calling style is very similar. Cause you know, don't get me wrong. You, Sharp, and millions probably of other people are a lot smarter in the specs than I am. however, from my little bit of experience, it seems like timing was more important than anything. It was when you called, not what call you made, you know?
Yeah.
And me, honkers at the house are very similar. You know, you kind of, and I would say to me, a spec's kind of a hybrid between a mallard and a honker when it comes to calling.
No, I'll just say that they're kind of close. So they work like a mallard.
Yeah. I mean, but it's very like, you know, like I said, you know, mallards to me, you don't shut up over the top. You keep their attention. These specs, you don't want them looking in on the blind on you just because how weary they are. So you have to, you know, it's all in win. So I truly enjoyed it just for the challenge. And, you know, midway through the season when I don't know what happened, something clicked. You know, I was always messing with the guys around there and I was like, I don't know what's going on, but they're listening.
You know, so, hey, Chris, he's being a little modest because – yeah, he taught me during spec season. He taught me something to get on the birds.
What was that?
So we were hunting, and it, dude, it was kind of rough that those few little, it was a couple of days. We got on real good, and the birds, you know, it's Arkansas early spec. Let me tell you, the birds learn quick. And we were joking, you know, me and Sharp were joking with Matt saying, you know, he's doing the, you know, kind of rudimentary, you know, lick a hee hee ha ha on the call, which works. And me and Sharp, you know, we get so, you know, we forget the basics sometimes. You know, we're over here double clucking and moaning and, you know, getting scratchy on it. And there was one day I had one client out. He was trying to, you know, scratch his bird's eye. It was an afternoon hunt at old Lane Farm Shop Prevail. Yep. And I was getting on the call and they were coming in, but they were getting real weary. And I was like, you know, I was getting frustrated kind of. And I was like, you know what, man? I was, you know, and I'm blowing these calls, this call and the birds are kind of weary. And I was like, yeah, I go, hee hee ha ha on the call. Just, you know, your rudimentary, which you would teach a kid how to break the reed over. And these geese on a dime just spun around. I was like, Oh, all right. It was everything like Bill Daniels would be like, hey, don't ever do that again. But I just kept doing it. Hey, I was totally, you know, Bill would be like, hey, it ain't the call, it's you, bud. And, dude, yeah. And it was just, a, you know, hee-hee, ha-ha, hee-hee. And they came all the way in. The client ended up shooting two. And then, you know, it was getting kind of close to the shoot line. I was like, hey, man, two is better than none. And it's almost three and we'll hunt tomorrow. But yeah, it was so weird. The second I kind of did like the bare basic hee hee ha ha, they just on a dime turned around and just floated right into the decoys.
Well, that's crazy. We're talking about calling, man, and like how much Joe. It's crazy that was even said. But sometimes, like we've talked about this before, just not in the snow. Not in the speckle belly calling game. It's like calling ducks and stuff, like going back to the basics. But it's crazy that, you know, you have people there. It's like, hey, let's just do this. Get your tricycles back on. It's still going to work.
Yeah. Well, just like, you know, just like Matt said, it's all timing. It's not sometimes that how you, I mean, as long as you're not out there just blowing a kazoo. Oh.
I mean, yeah, you can't terrible, but to me, even if you, and to me, I personally think, you know, Joe can tell you, I've come a long way since, you know, the time we were sitting there in the living room and I was trying to learn to blow a spec call. I mean, you can make it all the fancy noise you want, but if you're doing it when them birds are staring down in a pit on top of you and they're already looking, they're already pit shy, you've lost the, you know.
Well, this year, it didn't seem pit shy.
I think a lot of it too is like, it's like the same thing. Like, it's like, it's all water. It's all duck hunting, goose hunting, whatever it may be, waterfowl hunting, right? I think it's what they like that day. And Joe, we've talked about this hundreds of times personally, one-on-one. And then, you know, on the show with other people, and Matt, you know, this guiding and all the, you know, the, Canada, hunting you've done. And even wood ducks. I mean, divers, and, we'll get on divers again. Cause it's funny. You like divers. I'm actually really intrigued on divers, but I never had the opportunity kind of like, just because we have big lakes here, but I think one of my big dreams is hunt divers on the Great Lakes up in Michigan. But I think, yeah, but I mean, I think it's just, man, it's just mixing it up. I mean, we've talked about this before. The birds are going to do something one day, the next day it's like, and y'all know this guiding different days, like, man, these birds aren't doing it. And I mean, I heard that with when I went out there with y'all hunting, like, oh, the birds are going to do it. Want this, and then they switch it up. It's something different.
Well, yeah. I mean, you talking about, you know, the last time we all did together, when we all hunted the same day was over at DLW's, where we did, you know, the veterans hunt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the hunt that me and Chris did, you know, it was completely like, you know, where everyone was like, oh, you know, last day of the season, soft calling, but Chris was there. And yeah, I was waiting. You know, that's what they wanted. They wanted hard on the call all the way to the water from the time it broke. And it was funny. Me and Chris were laughing about the whole that hunt. The statement you made at dinner the night before, we talked about, like, I wish we had green wings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We were laughing the whole time because for the viewers, this year I killed a lot of ducks. I did real good. I mean, I was blessed. But I killed more green wings than I knew what to do with. And, you know, Matt and Sharp and all them were like, well, it must be nice having green wings. And there ain't none in Arkansas.
No. I don't think people, like, don't get me wrong, man. We kill plenty of greenheads. You know, of course, we get our massive wads of pintails. But from the guiding standpoint, green wings and spoonies will save your entire...
Yeah.
They will sell the day and, you know, put that experience on. But, dude, we didn't have them. I mean, there was two or three days that I killed teal good. But there might have only been two or three days total that I killed more than four or five teal in the blind, which...
Well, heck, I think we killed 20. We shot a four in Linden. Yeah, killed 20.
And then, it was... Two were just coming, and when we saw the first one, I was like, I thought there was no green wing tail here. Well, and then boom, the next one, and then boom. I was like,
Yeah, it was crazy. It's nuts. Well, and you said everyone. I mean, I'm never going to say I don't want to shoot a mallard.
Yeah,
but everyone thinks, you know, when they go to Arkansas, you picture Arkansas. What you see on RNT TV, what you see on, the Echo Boys and all that, on Freddie King's videos, shooting them and shoot them in the timber. Mm-hmm. But people forget Arkansas has just as much timber it has. It's number one rice producing state in the country, and in those rice fields, I mean, you shoot your mallards, but usually you're shooting a big mixed bag.
Oh yeah.
Did you have any clients kind of like say, hey, you know, that come from outside the state of where's the mallards at this year?
I had a few. I was very fortunate this year as far as like my client groups. I had a lot of hunters. Which I know that probably sounds kind of dumb to a lot of people, but you know, there's a big difference between having, you know, true hunting guys. Like, you know, I had a lot of guys that ran public land back wherever they were from. And, you know, those type of guys are awesome to have in the blind because, one, they don't care what they shoot. You know, they work hard just to kill ducks. They don't care what it is. But, yeah, I had a couple groups. I did have one group. I had a group. I can't remember where they were from. They were up north somewhere. And came down. And it was really kind of weird because I took them, like, middle of the season, pawpaws up there.
Oh, yeah, pawpaws.
For some reason, it wasn't didn't have a whole lot of birds, but you were going to get to work a couple groups of mallards every morning. It might be your only, you know, three, four groups that morning, but you were going to get a shot at some greenheads. And I think we killed, there was three or four people in the blind. I think we killed like seven mallards, maybe. We might have killed seven, might have been six. And they were like, you know, it's not a bag, but we just really wanted to kill mallards in Arkansas. That's all we wanted to kill. And I was like,
yeah,
man, I want to go there and beat down on the teal. I want to go beat down on spoon. And, you know, I want to go shoot a stack.
Yeah, I love the idea. Yeah, spoonies are definitely spoonies. And then, I mean, usually, I mean, you always get your pintail, and especially pawpaws. You know, I didn't hunt pawpaws much this year, but last year, I, that's where I ended my season with pawpaws. And, we shot speck, mallards, spoonies, and pintails.
Yeah, we shot during that veterans hunt that y'all were up there for. That's where me and Cisco took that group of guys we had. Yeah. And I would say I know pintails, specks, a snow, couple mallards, and gadwall, I think.
Gadwall, yeah. And we shot a gadwall.
I think we shot gadwall, pennies, and specks and mallards. We shot big ducks. I don't think we shot very many teal or anything. Because I know we had that morning, now to talk about green wings, I was working a big group of pintails, and it just happened. The guys had been talking about pintails that morning. And we had two green wings suicide diving with decoys.
Really?
And they're swimming around, and I told the guys, I was like, look, boys, y'all want your pennies, these are going to do it. Just give them a minute, you know, just give them a minute. And so we let, you know, some green wings swim around the decoys before we finally had, you know, three or four big bulls give it up and come down, and we were able to kill them. And, you know, everybody was excited because they got birds for the wall, you know. But, yeah. You know, that also, at the same time, that's one of those things, it'll get you in trouble sometimes because, you know, these guys could shoot birds that are swimming in the decoys, and you're telling them to wait for birds that, you know, might do it, might not, you know.
Yeah. And that, dude, that is a hard, you know, that was a hard part when people talk, you know, what's your hardest part of guiding? You know, you're pleasing that client, but it's hard sometimes, like, you know, this year, I think you might have been on this spec hunt with us. You guys, when you hunted that with me that field that afternoon, but that morning, yeah, you guys were hunting a pin, we were hunting a layout. No, I had 10 guys, and you have, you know, I had three specs, you know, doing it right. They're in, but then you see, I knew I had off to my left, I had 30 specs that were just about to float in. And, you know, I could look down, and you could tell the guys, you could see the little door, it's kind of like bumping because, you know, they're,
yeah.
And, you know, the other specs, they just landed out in the field, you know, across, you know, into another field. Another three get up, you know, but you know, they got up with them. And it was like, man, do we shoot these three birds or do we possibly, there's 10 of you guys that may, well, everyone's peppering these birds. You don't know who shot it. You know, obviously, with a spec, everybody wants it for the wall. Or do I wait and possibly limit out? You know, the shooting's good. And, you know, that's always a hard part of guiding that, you know, for the clients, you know, sometimes for the viewers, if you guys are going to some of these paid hunts, you know, that's what's going through the guide's mind. When there's birds in the decoys, he ain't calling the shot yet, but he sees this Mondo wad coming in that may or may not do it right.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, it's definitely tough. And I mean, you know, like I was talking, I've got a buddy who, he came by the house just a minute ago, and you know, he's not new to waterfowl hunting, but he is newer. He's been doing it, you know, 4 or 5 years. And he talks about he wants to guide one day. And I'm like, dude, you know, he runs a call well. You're more than capable of doing it. Just, I was like, it's a lot of experience, a lot of time. Kind of like what we were talking about before. It's, you know, to me, it just takes more time in the field, but you have to be able to learn to figure out what they want that day. But also, man, it's just learning to deal with people and that.
It's learning how to manage personalities.
Yeah.
And every day you're getting a new personality to manage. And you're going to have you might have a group that, you know, they're buddies, or you might have to have a mixed group of two groups, you know, and you have to learn how to manage all those personalities to, I think we talked about it. The guide outfitters, they're selling a hunt. The guide, you're selling an experience.
Yeah.
You know, the outfitter gives you the opportunity to hunt, but the guide in that blind, he's selling you the overall waterfowl experience. So, I mean, that's, for anyone who wants a guide, that's what you kind of have to think about. It's, because just like you said, you guys killed, a few mallards, right? And 5 guys, 7 mallards, that's a good day of hunting. And they're happy because now they got mallards in Arkansas and mallards for the wall.
Yep. And it's so weird too, man, because it's, I don't know. I would like to say, I'm kind of in between, the old head of just the experience is enough to the new way of it's all about a pile picture. I like to think I'm somewhere in the middle. Like the experience of hunting, I'm a big process person. So the experience of hunting and all the work going into it, when it works, I love to death. But at the same way, I work my ass off for results.
Yeah, for results.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, what's funny is that's kind of how Chris was on his first hunt. I was apologizing the whole hunt after.
I think that's just like, I think that's a personality thing. And people, I don't know, I guess you guys would know a little bit more, like the more experienced hunter or even a person who's hunted, whether it be big game or squirrel hunts, rabbit hunts, hog hunts, whatever it may be, and then getting a waterfowl. But I mean, for me, it was the experience, man. And honestly, that's why I think I fell in love with timber hunting with Joe and wood ducks, because it kind of felt like me being in the in a climb stand or something in the woods, chasing deer or whatever. So it was kind of the same thing for me. I enjoyed it. And that was probably, man, I would say minus Arkansas, the mine and Joe's hunt, because we were just, it was crazy, the calling, but I would say probably my best hunts, me maybe shot 3, 4, 5 birds, if that. But some of my best hunts are those, just because, I mean, you kind of respect it more at that point, for me.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, that's why I like to tell everybody I'm in between, because it's kind of the same way. I like the clients that are kind of in between, too. Like, I want you to have the drive that, like, hey, man, we want to kill birds, but at the same time, you have to be able to enjoy just being out there, just everything about it, the experience of it. For me, like, this year, don't get me wrong, I had some wild hunts, with clients that, I'll remember for a long time. We had an afternoon hunt this year that we killed right at 30 in like an hour and a half. And, and it was a mix of mallards, pintail, gadwall, teal, spoonies, you name it, we killed it that afternoon. If it can be shot in a rice field in Arkansas, we pretty much killed it that afternoon. But honestly, one of my favorite hunts this year was I came home for Thanksgiving this year, and a buddy of mine, I'd been picking on him because we've hunted together for years, and this year was the first year that we weren't going to get to hunt together, I didn't think at all. I came home for Thanksgiving, and the day after Thanksgiving, he wanted me to come out. He had found some birds on the public lake, and I was like, you want me to come, show you how to kill them. We public lake in Georgia, you know, nothing special. I think we shot our 5-man limit of bluebills and 3 or 4 bonus green wings and a pintail. And honestly, you know, I got to get in my boat that morning at 2 a.m., run down the lake, cold as can be, and sleep in the spot. My dog cuddled up on the boat and hang some birds off a, you know, Georgia DNR sign. And I was like, you know, that was a pretty awesome morning. You know what I mean?
Five guys and had, I mean, you probably killed, what, 20 birds off of 5 guys.
Well, no, not with the bluebills. With the bluebills, I think we ended up killing, what did we end up killing that morning? 10, 9, 10, get one bluebill piece.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing, man. When we get the divers, every now and then it seems like it's a mix, but it seems like whatever part of the lake you're on, you're going to kill that species of the bird. It's almost like they separate.
Yeah.
And like, you know, that day, the first group of bluebills that we worked and, you know, everybody said, you know, kind of down here, you know, guys are kind of like, you know, it's kind of, they kind of do it like wood ducks. You know, they say you set your long lines with the divers and you just let them be.
Yeah.
And I think that's a terrible idea. I scream at them things when we'll be hell gone. And,
yeah.
We had the first group we had spin was probably 250, 300 bluebills spinning, you know. And I mean, you can only kill one, but, you know, when you're in a state that's not supposed to be able to kill ducks and you got 300 ducks spinning over your deep lift, that's all right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So let's get in a little bit there. Cause I know Chris, you know, Chris said earlier he wants to talk about, for, you know, about the divers. And like I said, I know if me shooting divers, it's, I'm shooting them with puffer bugs.
Yeah.
Talk about kind of, you know, how your divers spread and, you know, and if you were like, hey, I'm going to Lake Seminole today, how would you set up for a good diver beatdown?
All right. So if we're going to Seminole, I'm chasing the king. I'm chasing the canvasback. That's it. I mean, that's the whole reason we're there. Down there, it's kind of like Louisiana. Massive rafts of coots. I mean, you're going to run them over leaving the boat ramp. So for me, my Seminole spread is probably a dozen, 2 dozen canvasback decoys and 3 or 4 dozen coot decoys. And it's a big black raft with, you know, kind of, I don't even really long line it. I'm more just kind of sprinkle canvasbacks around. And out there, you know, kind of, you know, I just said the whole calling thing. I don't really call it cans like a wooden mallard. I mean, we run a mallard call, but you're not working them. I keep a mallard call on me to keep them from sitting down. So what happens out there is obviously it's a public lake, bunch of boat traffic, bunch of heart pressure. These birds will sit in the center of the lake near the dam, something like that, and they'll raft up somewhere safe. They get shore shy pretty quick. So, you know, we'll run a call if you, you know, they're working your spread and they go to lock up and sit down in the middle. I mean, you can yell at them on a mallard call. I've seen guys make crazy kazoo noises, you know, whatever, just to keep them up in the air.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, it's all about, you know, black sticks out in the water. You know, I know it doesn't seem like it would, but flat black stands out more than anything you can have. So to me, it's a massive coot spread down there. That's how we've had good luck killing them. We've killed them that way. And then we've also killed them in the afternoon where, you know, we've kept just a few decoys with us and we rode around and we found them. Obviously, you know, I run a mud motor, you get within 200 yards of them, they're getting up. Yeah. We bumped them, thrown 4 or 5 decoys, ran the boat up in the cattail, sat down, and if they were loafing there to start with, they're going to come back to loaf again.
Yeah.
You know, killed them coming back over 4 or 5 decoys.
Yeah. That's weird. I'm not weird, but, you know, because, you know, I mean, I'm not a diver expert by any means, but usually, you know, like you said, you know, you have to make a 6 dozen spread because you hear guys putting out just hundreds of of long line, you know, long lines out for them.
When we hunt up around the house, when we're targeting you know, every diver that's around the area, not just Canvasbacks. Me and a buddy hunt together, and I think we've got 9 long lines together, so it's 9 dozen. And, you know, it's a mix of cans, bluebills, buffheads, ringers, a few redhead decoys. I mean, we get some redheads, but nothing like Florida holds or, you know, Texas or Louisiana or any of that.
Yeah. So. You'd be surprised. We don't get many redheads out here.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I shot one this year. And before that, even down in Lacassine, where, you know, me and Chris, you know, hunted out a lot, you know, there was one day that we killed 3, me and the boys, we each killed 1. But yeah, I haven't, where I'm hunting, I don't see a lot of redheads. I've killed more canvasback than redheads down here in Louisiana.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I just don't, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if they're heading more east. I mean, I just don't know the general area where I'm at. Chris, do you have anything about the diver hunting?
No, man, I think we talked about this, 2 years ago? When I got my boat or whatever, I wanted to hunt the main lakes. And we were talking about runways and long lines and all this stuff. But really, man, I never got it. I never did it. I did it one year, and that was the year, or one day, and that was the day I shot all them, the green wings. I shot those mallards and stuff, and then shot the coot.
Yeah.
You shoot all those over your diver spread?
Yeah,
He went. And he's like, "Hey, man, I got it. I'm gonna do this diver hunt thing. I got this boat," and he shows me a picture, which I was super stoked. I was like, "Yo, he killed ducks by himself. Awesome." I was like, "Hey, bud, weren't you diver hunting?" He's like, "Yeah,
I know." Yeah.
I'm telling you, people around here, like Georgia, we all joke around about it. Anybody that duck hunts in Georgia, they've got 6 wood ducks and 6 mallards. That's what they have.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've heard people at, you know, 4 in the morning idling past us and go, "What the hell is that?" It'll be 9 dozen divers. And everybody thinks we're nuts. And then all of a sudden, every puddle duck that flies over that lake bumped into that massive white and black spread. And I'm like, "Hey, man,
it's
learn one day."
Yeah, it's a contract. Even in the rice fields, and Chris has seen this, I'm big on spoonbill decoys. And I'm big on pintail. You know, I might put 100 decoys out of my pond in my rice pit. Really, I might only have 15 mallard decoys. The rest, I try to keep obviously a lot of teal and gadwall and all that. But my majority of my spread's gonna be pintails and spoonies. With a little bit of wood, you know, with some widgeon in there because of that black and white contrast. I'm real big, just like you said, I am super big on that black and white contrast. I think they can see it from miles away. And it's a natural look.
If we're hunting on the lake or when the divers are here, we're running the diver spread. When the divers aren't here and I'm going to hunt the big water, like, you know, we've got a couple lakes around us that have a decent population of resident mallards. I mean, it's not great, but I mean, if you wanted to go kill, you know, 1 or 2 a day, you probably could. I mean, you have to go find them, but you could. I'll still run a big spread, but it's mainly Canadas. I've got 5 dozen Canada floaters.
Yeah.
And I'll run Canada floaters and, you know, 6 or 7 mallards kind of sprinkle through it. And we killed a 2-man of ringnecks 2 years ago over a honker spread. Diving into it.
I mean, that's the same way. I mean, and that's, you know, for people like, "Oh, it's kind of weird." It's really not. If you think about the guys that are hunting or targeting ducks in the dry fields.
Oh, yeah.
I know guys that they'll put Canada full, 7, 8, 9, 12 dozen Canada full bodies and only run spinning wings.
Mm-hmm.
And they're targeting ducks. The ducks see those because the ducks are hungry. They're looking for a feed. If the geese are there, they know that, well, there's food there. And that's what they're coming, you know, that's what they're coming to. So yeah. And it's confidence because there ain't nothing warier than a goose. I don't care if it's Canada goose, speckled belly, a snow goose. If they see geese, they see safety.
I don't know. Them Juvy snows are pretty damn dough.
You guys killed this year?
We killed them good. Man, we had like probably a week and a half, 2 week stretch that we didn't really have ducks at all. Like it was pretty rough. But we had a pile of juvie snow geese. And like me and Sharp took some clients one day and I want to say we killed like 25 or 30 and they were almost all juvie snow. I mean, no calling, no nothing. You'd look up and it'd be like 5 foot over some layout line. Just, and I was like, hey man, somebody shoot that.
Yeah. Oh, that's like, funny. Oh man.
All right. So I guess this year you'll go back. You're still guiding, obviously. What is your season looking for as far as like making time to do personal stuff? You just gonna do all your personal hunt in Arkansas this year? You may plan any trips?
I would like to make it down to Louisiana for two.
He's gonna make it.
That's my goal. my goal is to hunt teal. After that, probably not. I'm probably just gonna run again. That's really my biggest thing. I mean, like I said, I'd like to, in the perfect world, I'd get to hunt teal and turn around and run right back up to New York and go hunt hawkers and then come back to Arkansas. But you know, I don't know.
One day, buddy.
Yeah, between the wallet and the old lady, I don't see that happening. Yeah. But not really. I think it's going to be, I'm going to try to do early teal somewhere because, like, we'll hunt early teal here at the house because my season always starts at the house either way because, you know, we get early goose in September. So I'll get to chase the geese here. And then, like I said, I'm going to try to get to Louisiana. I'll hunt early teal here too, but it's kind of 1 year it'll be good. You'll get a day or two where you can kill them pretty good. And then the next year, it's like they just skip us and we never see them. They'll be in South Georgia or Florida before, you know, season ever opens. So,
yeah.
So you do any other style? I mean, I see the bow up there. You do big game hunting, I'm assuming, and stuff. Do you have time to do that?
My wife deer hunts actually more than I do. Oh, wow. we've got a lease. And I don't get me wrong. I kill deer. You know, like I've got a bunch of buddies that are huge into it because it's obviously they're more prevalent here than ducks are. And they are all those guys that run trail cameras all year long. They pick one deer and they target that deer. And if I had the patience for that, I would love it. But man, I it's not for me. I normally try to shoot a couple does during bow season. Just enough to put some deer sausage in the freezer. And then I'm done. But we mainly bow fish. We do a bunch of bow fishing in the off season.
Awesome. Yeah.
Well, that's where Louisiana's happening.
Bow fishing. I mean, a lot of guys are they're bow fishing reds, gar, the carp.
The red, cool. You know, I got to go down there last year. And I was down there for about a week bow fishing.
Really?
And the reds are cool. It's cool to shoot something that you can eat because, you know, around here, carp. But
you can eat a carp, but.
Yeah, you can. But no, so the reds are cool. To me, I love the freshwater in Louisiana because it's ridiculous. You know, y'all have Asian carp, y'all have big heads, y'all have everything.
Yeah.
Y'all have buffs. And then just the pure numbers.
Yeah.
You know, the numbers down there.
I know a lot of guys come down here for real big alligator gar.
Yeah, yeah. We shot a few alligator gar, nothing huge. It was pretty cool because the two guys that I actually shoot bow fishing tournaments with came down there with me. So we had a full bow fishing team down there. So we actually did a couple guided while we were down there.
What part of Louisiana?
We were right outside of Lafayette.
All right.
I can't remember what lake or what, put in. I have no clue.
You're probably in the basin.
Maybe somewhere right underneath the highway.
Yeah, that's the basin. That's that's floods in the basin. Highway.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, no, and it like we shot paddlefish down there. The paddlefish. Yeah. I didn't even know y'all had them.
Yeah.
One just showed up, glue was glowing pink underneath the light, and I was like, "What is that?" He's like, "It's a paddlefish. You can shoot them." And we ended up shooting our, you know, our 3-man paddlefish. Huh?
Did you eat the paddlefish?
Oh yeah.
See, I've heard paddlefish is really good. Yeah, I've heard that.
It's, you know, it's really clean. Like you can see through it.
Yeah.
It's almost like you know, I don't know how much if y'all do any saltwater fishing or anything, but if you ever clean a hogfish. You know, you can hold it at the light and see through it. And the paddle, yeah. You could. They were really good. Yeah, we ate them.
Guys, I heard that this year that they're actually really good eating.
Mm-hmm. We do a lot of bow fishing, but really, man, it's just to pass the time. That's all it's doing.
Yeah. Which I love bass fishing, but I grew up, my brother and dad are real big into bass fishing. I bass fish a lot, but it's to pass the time. Or turkey hunt, which I call, you know, turkey hunt out here in Louisiana is just taking your gun for a walk.
You can go. We got them.
Yeah.
About to say, I've got them on the lease. I've killed a couple of them. I've taken some guys to kill them. But, you know, and like, so, you know, we open up, here soon, like right around April. Yeah. And, you know, I'll go, as long as it's still cool. And the ticks and all haven't got nuts yet.
Yeah.
That go. But the moment I sit down next to a tree and there's stuff crawling all over me, I'm out.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have an interest to get crawled all over and sweat for a turkey. But yeah. I know there's guys that love it to death. It just, not for me.
So, before we start winding down, there's a thing topic I like to talk about all the time with guests. Especially hardcore waterfowl guests, gear. And Chris, what have you seen? And I know we're all going to Delta this year. But, you know, what piece of gear did you use this year that kind of you're like, oh, dang, I've never used it before, that got you, you know, that you would say, hey, this was a pillar of success I had this year, this piece of equipment, and what are you kind of looking into next year for gear wise?
I wouldn't say gear, man. Cause it all depends what you call gear. So like my basic gear, clothing, all that stuff, I've had for a few years. You know, I kind of jumped on the Sitka bandwagon, you know, when they came out.
Yeah.
And dude, knock on wood, I've got nothing really bad to say. Like, don't get me wrong. I've got some zippers that get muddy and don't want to zip every now and then, but I also hunted, you know, 70 days or something this year where they're So, and be honest with me, I'm not the person to take care of, to wash off every night. You know, my stuff gets thrown in the bed of the truck or in the trailer and gets put on the next morning anyways.
Yeah.
As far as gear like that, nothing. The new thing I went to this year is I swapped up calls.
Ooh, you're right.
I started dump stuff this year.
Yeah, some RMs. Well, yeah, you pulled a cold weather fan and a 410, weren't you?
Yeah. And I like my 410 a lot. To me, it seemed like more of like you don't know what they want that day, something different.
Yeah.
That 410 shined.
Yes, I will definitely say that.
Everyday cold, man, I picked up that cold weather fan and, you know, and I'm kind of, I wouldn't say like I'm a cold junkie, but there's probably, you know, 30 or so sitting on the shelf over there.
Yeah.
You know, I hadn't even started looking. You know, I was even talking to Buzz. I said, man, I ain't looked at nothing new. I'm gonna run a cool. I'm damn near thinking about going to a 2-loop lanyard. I'm gonna run a weather fan again because
you're the only thing that keeps me from going for a two-loop lanyard. And I tell people this all the time. I told Chris this when he got in. I'm like, bro, all you need is a whistle, a mallard call, And then depending where you're hunting, throw a wood duck and a goose call of some totems of some type.
Yeah.
But hunting in the rice, I think I run a whistle, two mallards, and two specks.
Yeah.
And, you know, which isn't a lot. I don't think, sometimes I feel like five calls is a lot, but it is kind of hard keeping a two loop lanyard when you're guiding the rice. I think rice kind of has to keep you.
Well, that's,
there's very much to it.
Guiding is kind of hard. And I mean, maybe it's just me and I just spit in the calls or whatever. But, you know, whether it's the weather or, you know, whether it's rain or really cold temperatures, like, you know, this year during that freeze up, dude, that if it wasn't for having two mallard calls, I mean, it would have been a pain because when it was, you know, 4 degrees.
Yeah, one, it was one's tough, you wait, you're staying warm. The other one, then you swap, you're rotating them out.
Back and forth, you know. And that's really my only thing. But, yeah, no, I mean, that's really the only new thing I had this year was swapping calls. As far as all my clothes and gear like that, it's all been the same. And like I said, I really did. I fell in love with those RMs, and I don't know. I mean, I'd like to try some forest stuff one day. I know I was talking to Barrett, and he's actually got an acrylic that Forrest put out.
Ooh, yeah, well, yeah, because they're good friends, because Forrest don't like the acrylic.
Yeah, I know.
They don't like turning acrylic.
And Barrett kept saying, man, I'm going to put this in your hands one day. You're going to fall in love with it. I was like, do it. Because, I mean, me, like you said, I don't take care. I mean, I really don't, Mike.
Yeah.
And I know it sounds terrible that I know I don't take care of it. And that's, you know, it's worse. You know, Joe washes calls off every day after. Yeah. All mine are lucky if they come out of the side by side. I mean,
I picked on Sharp a lot. I'm like, you know, your call is going to be tuned, buddy. It needs to get all this Copenhagen and dirt from underneath the reed. That's what it needs.
Yeah. So, I mean, to me, I can't run a wood call for that reason, especially not, you know, a nice wood call is a $250 plus call. Oh, yeah, it's a $200 call.
Yeah, it's $200. How much force calls run? But yeah, I'll tell you what. Chris seen it. I'm at for a mid range all around call. Force call, I really like. I really liked it because you could hammer on it, but it was a real mellow call. What I liked about it, what I liked about Palm Creek. And for the viewers, you can go back. We did a call segment on his calls where he talks about them. But what I liked about it, because I have an African Blackwood, it's a mellow call. When the birds are working and, you know, I don't have to scream at them, I keep it on my lanyard, and that's what I'll usually go to. And depending where I'm hunting, you know, I like the pair calls. You know, if I have a cold weather fan, I'll have a OTP or a 410. If I'm blowing a rock and R or a cut down or anywhere I need a cut down, I have a Pond Creek because it's the opposite of what that cut down is. And if I'm blowing that cut down, that can see, all right, they're coming in, they'll turn, but then they kind of get wonky. Mm-hmm. I'll pick up that call, and it was where his is a very ducky, mellow duck sound. And I mean, you can't beat it for that.
Yeah, no, if he ever runs an acrylic, I'll end up just because,
you know. Wood is wood. Chris McCall, what are you running?
So I got the Alpha.
Yeah.
And then actually two Alphas now. I got the Alpha that I was gifted by somebody.
A very handsome young man.
And then I had the, I lost, remember, my cold weather fan when actually 2 years ago when I was supposed to go to Arkansas, didn't make it because Texas had that ice storm in February and hit some black ice and totaled my truck. So I didn't make it. But I lost that one because I left like a dump. Well, I don't know what to say. I was dealing with a bunch of stuff. It was in my cooler and with my stuff in the back. And I don't know. I just went back to go look for it. It was gone. The whole lanyard was gone. They left. They left a nice Yeti, but they took the calls. It must have been a hunter. I was like, touche.
It was somebody getting on that one.
He knew what they're doing.
Yeah, he knew who it was. I was like, well, okay. So, but no, I definitely want another cold weather fan. I like that call a lot. I had the
Quack Ops.
Quack Ops. I had the Quack Ops. I like that one. That's I like that one a lot. I really like, I did like the way that Bill sounded when you were calling it that day.
Keep going.
Yeah. My bad. My AirPod though.
Yeah.
I like that the way that one sounded when I was hearing it. I was like, man, it didn't sound like it was too much work to blow it.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's another one that you can probably look at, Matt, is that was like the only thing I did is not a knock on Rice and it's a knock on, you know, Joe. And Sharp gives me, you know, he picks on me a lot about this. My reeds have to be tuned long and heavy.
Yeah,
you put my calls, yeah, they're heavy. So you know, when I got a Riceland, the Riceland original, I took the reed out and got the other reed, and I, you know, it's dog eared and I just barely trimmed some off of it. And yeah, that's actually a really good hunting call that I really like. And it's one that I'm actually thinking about even competing with this year. But
I want to try to run. What's their Riceland's got a small bore half. Small bore spec call. What is that one? Like the 23, something like that?
You know, there's that one, it's a half cut. And there's the 23 older, the OS 23, which is an old school 23. It's a kind of a tribute half cut to the olds. And then I have that one that you see me hunt with, that little half cut. That's absolutely my favorite spec call. I have a little acrylic half cut that I am. If I had one spec call to hunt with, that would be it. Be a half.
I want to try that one of their probably those OS 23s. Maybe I'll have my Delta or something. Because
he will.
I picked up that old a while back. What is that one? Why am I going blank? What's that guy's name? Seth something. Seth Fields. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know it's a pretty big name to forget in, but. I picked up one of his olds and I like it a lot. Yeah. To me, whether it matters or not, it's kind of like a full range call. You know, you can get quiet, firmer with it, or you can, you know, you can kind of jump on them a little bit. And I like it a lot. So I'd like to try Rison's because, you know, I had their 3/4 gut call and not their call by any means. I think it was just me not being able to build enough back pressure to run that call. I mean,
funny thing about calls is like you got to find one that suits you, and I've told Chris this. I'm like, just get a call that's something that I may like. It might not suit other. I mean, because we all wear different hats, we all wear different shirts, we all shoot different shotguns. You know, some shotguns shoot better than others. For that person, I could be completely wrong. Calls are kind of the same way. It's just you find the one that, you know, that you're good with and sticking with it. I really like Riceland. Riceland half cut is my absolute favorite. And it's not the OS. Yeah. It's just the original little half cut that he had. What new year have you seen that maybe you're curious about trying for next year?
I don't know. I think my biggest, I guess, plan on gear, I haven't really paid too much attention as far as what news coming out, but I want goose decoys, like spec decoys. That's my next step. And that was part of, you know, like we were talking about before, the new trailer build is I want goose decoys because that's this year, you know, and just like I talked about before, I've always hunted over a pile of goose decoys. And in Arkansas, it seemed like guys didn't do that as much. And to me this year is if I could find my way into one of our fields that had a big goose spread, you know, it,
I think there's a lot of ducks doing that, especially over water.
Yeah, no, it was going to be a killing day, whether it was ducks, geese, both, you know, a lot of times it was both this year. But if I could, you know, ease my way into that big full body spread somewhere, you know, that's when it was going down. So that's kind of, and you know, like I said, at the outfitter, Dustin was pretty gracious this year and picked up a bunch of goose decoys.
Oh yeah, he did.
A bunch. Yep. And
you should know best out of everybody. You did the long haul.
I did. But you know, I almost want to pick up, you know, an extra 3-4 dozen of my own just to, you know, cause Al, you know how it is. Sometimes you're hunting one of our fields that we have and there's a spread on it, or you just happen to find ducks and Dustin or one of the locals or somebody knows somebody who gets you in that field for the next day with clients. And it'd be nice to, you know, have some SXs or something like that.
Oh yeah. SX or A, you know, splurge a little bit. You deserve it. Get some of Dan Smith or Dave Smith.
Hey, I'll run them and I'll film a podcast episode if you'll pay for them. All right. I'll go live from the field.
Hey, speaking of decoys and dust and all that, Chris, I mean, we talked about some past episodes. He was there the day of the infamous Sharp and Joe argument about a padlock.
Oh yeah.
No, I was fixing a toilet and trying to tell him where he should be in Sharp.
Oh, I wish Sharp was on here today, but yeah, bro. I love that kid to death. Love him like a dang brother. I'll murder someone for Sharp. But that day, bud, when he's like, hey, do you know what a padlock is?
Yeah. But y'all couldn't get, I haven't seen him on here lately. Y'all can't talk about a big money down there?
Oh, man, Sharp's still living the dream. He's still pumping out. He's still guiding.
I know he is.
Yeah, Sharp's still guiding. You know, now he's doing a little bit of upland stuff.
Yeah.
Out there in Georgia. Sharp is, for the viewers, go check him out. He's guiding some upland game over at, I think it was Mossy Ponds. Mm-hmm. Mossy Ponds Outfitter. Right now, he's actually guiding a hog hunt, a thermal hog hunt.
Yeah, he sent me a video he sent me a Snapchat last night.
Yeah.
I'm assuming there was a pile of hogs in the Snapchat, so I'm assuming they're covered up down there.
Yeah, it's like anywhere in the South.
Yeah.
Hogs are cockroaches.
Man, it's so weird down around us because it seems like if you have water, you have them.
You really?
If you don't have water, they won't be in. Because I wish they were on our property. Because honestly, like I said, summertime when, you know, we hang out on the river and on the lakes a lot and, you know, do the Maker's Mark sponsorship there to pass the time. But, dude, if my lease had hogs and I could go shoot something every day, I would 100%.
And, you know, they're good. I mean, everyone needs pork. Everyone's bacon. Everyone needs. Yeah.
Dude, that's, my brother-in-law, their family's got some property down in South Texas. And, we've shot piglets before.
Really?
And,
I bet those are great.
He'll pile up piglets, man. And I know it sounds kind of crazy that you're shooting baby pigs. And he's like, man, I won't shoot a big pig, but they'll have a pile of piglets. And they're good, man. They're tender.
Well, and then, like, I mean, people don't understand, like, I mean, the hogs and people, I don't know, maybe live up north, like, hogs are like, they cost billions and billions of dollars for farmers and agricultural life. And like, hell yeah, they'll attack other animals too. So,
oh yeah. Well, in Georgia, when I was living in Georgia, when I was still in the army, they just Fort Benning, where now it's Fort Moore. It costed the base, I think it was like $3 million in damage. Every year,
mm-hmm. Yeah, because they damage everything. I mean, they're damaging fencing. They'll go through three strand like it ain't nothing. Like just, yeah, but that's
fiber. They were digging up fiber optic, bro. There's Rudin's.
Oh, yeah.
And they were digging up fiber optic. And you know, it was all those fiber optic ranges. Remember the Wi-Fi ranges we had?
Yeah.
That would work off tablets. Yeah. They were digging that up and just destroying, like, you know, $100,000 worth of targetry on a range. And it's like, man, I mean, you know, hey, if anyone knows, you got to get rid of them. Holler at your boys.
Yeah.
We'll take care of you.
There you go. So we got,
yeah, you'll get a lot of farmers and once you take them off. I don't even care how you got
me. Send them snow geese. Hey, you guys need to get some. I know some guys that'll love to send out your snow geese population.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, talking about the gear, and Chris can vouch for me. You know, a piece of gear that opened my eyes this year that I used to kind of bash a little bit was those water pulsators.
Oh, dude, you can't bash a pulsator, man.
Bro, I did. I mean, until this year, like, those Higdons and the Lucky Ducks. I mean,
I run Lucky Ducks.
Yeah, that's what I was running this year with a Lucky Duck. But Christine, I was running 4 in the spread with some spinning wings. And bro, I was like, dang, I didn't. I mean, I should have been running these years ago.
Yeah, you almost don't have to do nothing.
Yeah.
So me this year. Like in the past, I've had them, I don't know, 3-4 years now, I guess. Right when they came out, we jumped on them. We jumped on them because of wood duckle. Because, yeah. I mean, flashing is what you kill them in, at least around us. You know, shoot them in the swamp, coming in and shooting light. And, but for me in Arkansas this year, I went through a couple of them.
Really?
Yeah, especially with the freeze up, you know, trying to run them when it was way too cold and, you know, the plastic and all didn't like it. So like the idea, they're awesome. You know, if I don't know, I would say if I had more time to constantly keep them charged every night and do all that and do everything right, they'd be great. You know, I ended up with a jerk cord again. but yeah, no, they really are. They're game changers. I don't know. You know, there's a few other that are, you know, kind of coming out, you know, that I've seen that are pretty cool. Cause you know, I know you were talking about another one. Y'all were looking at it one time. I don't know if y'all are still doing that.
Which ones?
Was it the Chatter Duck one or whatever?
Yeah. We're in talks with those guys. We're actually doing a hunt with them during teal season.
Okay.
That one intrigues me a lot.
Yeah. That one looks pretty cool. You know, I personally, between the Higdons and the Lucky Ducks, I like the Lucky Duck more. Just seem to me like the Lucky Ducks move more than the Higdon ones do.
Mm-hmm.
The Higdon ones are kind of like, they splash, but they just kind of seem like they'd rock 2 or 3 times with the Lucky Duck one, you know, it's kind of going nuts out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I would like to have, you know, Dustin runs a dozen of them.
Really?
He's got a dozen.
Golly.
It's either 10 or a dozen in a slot bag. And he brings them in every night, charges them. He runs every one of them. And that'd be pretty cool to have. Yeah, I think I've got 4 or 5. Got something I got to fix. But yeah, mainly for me, as far as that motion stuff, I just ran spinning wings. And then I bought one of those bluebird waterfowl things.
Explain.
It's the it's an arm that locks onto a wing, and it's got a little cup on the bottom of it. So when the mojo goes around,
I did use one. I didn't use that brand, but we use something similar to it. Mac, I can't remember. My apologies to the viewers. I can't remember the brand it was called. It was off eBay. My buddy down here bought. He bought 2 of them, and he put one on a blue wing, spinning wing, and then a mallard. And yes, it kind of, well, as the wings go, mm-hmm. It smacks the water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it worked out good. And, you know, those days where every ripple mattered.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, you've hunted rice fields forever. If you have wind, I don't think any of it matters.
Yeah,
you know,
that is true. Like,
Yeah. But you know, it's those days that it's just dead still that where those balls at the time.
When it's foggy and it's dead still, there's no wind. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's when those things really shine. But yeah, they are awesome, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. I think anything where I don't have to blow a car, I think I'm happy.
But that's the best part of it. Joe, tell him.
Yeah, I tried. He's a jerk cord type of guy. He likes the jerking of the cord.
That moment you hit it and they turn on a dime and you're like, yeah. Yeah. And they work their way down all the way to you. You're like, yeah, that's why I'm here.
There's definitely been lazy days where I'm like, I don't want to do nothing. Hell, if e-collars were legal, I'd use that.
You lock them down where you can start figuring them out. You don't have to shoot them.
You just want to call them.
Yeah.
I do what you're doing right now in a rocking chair with an e-collar, just laying with a shotgun.
Man, I had some guys, one of them had hunted with me a bunch, but the rest of them didn't know. They booked a trip with me this year. And we had one of those days where it was just, we couldn't do anything wrong. Really? I mean, well, if they could have shot a little bit better. Because they were getting mad at me because I wouldn't shoot. And I was like, man, I don't need to shoot. Like, these birds, they come off this corner, and there was, like, this 10-foot window. And if you hit them in this 10-foot window, they were coming.
Yeah.
If you hit them in that window, they'd make one big bang. You'd hit them again on this other corner, and the wind was right, and they would be – I mean, we were shooting them at 10, 15 feet.
Yeah.
And it was a wild day. I think we shot a 5-man. Plus some specs and, like 4 or 5 specs and a snow added on top of a 5-man of ducks and, shot a banded spec that morning. Like it was wild. Nice. Yeah. And, you know, I was trying to explain to them, you know, and we were working one of those groups of specs and, you know, those specs, they circled, you know, like specs, it seemed like 10 minutes. And on one of them, you know, let them get out about 50 yards and jumped on them real hard. And as soon as I jumped on them real hard, they turned and just fell out of the sky, you know.
Yeah.
And we ended up shooting them back, backpedaling over duck decoys. And
nice.
They were all just like, man, why didn't you help shoot on that? And I'm like, dude, I didn't need to. Like, I was done. You know, the moment they but I'm good. Like, I don't need to shoot. You know, they can leave. I care. But just... At this point, we just talked an animal into my plastic block with me blowing.
Yeah. The plastic block made and molded in China that came from
I've got this piece of plastic with some mylar in it, breathing into it. And they're like, yep, that's real.
Yeah, that's real. That's what I want.
Yeah. I'm like,
that's awesome.
So,
hey, Chris,
before we make this, a 3-hour show, because we've done that before, Matt. It was good conversating, man. Joe, do you have anything for Matt before we kind of get off?
No, besides, hey, man, love talking about duck hunting. And you will make it out here for till season.
Oh, yeah.
And I really appreciate being on the show.
Yeah, man.
Oh, dude, having me. Like I said, it's the first time I've ever done anything, but I am bullshit with anybody. But give me some dates where I can get the – get the approval from the sugar mama on going to Louisiana.
All right.
Yeah, I'll be there. That's
the important part. And he'll be there. And they, Chatter Duck will be down here as well.
Yeah. So it'll be a good hunt, man. We'll got to take him to Daryl's.
Yeah, that'll change your life.
Yeah, man. But
I'm down. Dump some corn in the water and I'm on the way.
Yeah. But like always, man, hey, man, thank the people who are supporting us, viewers, listeners, reach out to us, let us know what y'all want to hear from us next. And like always, y'all have a good one and let Valor knock down. Welcome back, guys. We're here with Jason Thorin with Edible Outdoors. He's going to come with another recipe for us today. Jason, how you doing?
Good, Chris. How are you, bud?
Doing good, man. So this one is going to be, I know we talked a little bit about it. Joe, he's probably going to have to buy his from Walmart, but this one's going to be on a cooking segment on turkey. So you want to tell the listeners on what exactly we're doing today?
Yeah. So this is probably one of my favorite turkey recipes. It's a wild turkey Tuscan pasta. And as the name might lead you to believe that, you know, you're going to have some tomatoes and some cream and spinach and mushrooms. And you'd be right if you assume that. It is by far my favorite. I'm a pasta guy. So this recipe really is, you know, one that I look forward to every time I harvest a turkey. So what I normally do is I prepare a normal package of angel hair pasta, put it aside, cook it al dente, because you're gonna kind of finish cooking it in the dish itself towards the end. You're gonna cook about 6 strips of bacon to, you know, somewhat crispy but not, you know, totally burnt. Take the bacon out. Take about half of that grease out of the skillet that you cook the bacon in. You're gonna set aside the bacon. What I normally do at this point is I'll cook the one half of the turkey breast. And now when I say turkey breast, there's this big ongoing thing. Do you mean the entire turkey breast, like both sides of the breastbone? When I say turkey breast, I mean one side of the turkey breast. So one half of the turkey's total breast. Cut it into bite-sized pieces, and then you're going to cook it to medium to about a golden brown in that bacon grease. Once you get it to that medium, that golden brown, you'll take it out of the bacon grease, and you're going to add garlic. You'll put a large can of diced tomatoes. I think that's a 28-ounce can of diced tomatoes.
Yeah.
With the liquid. No, I'm sorry. Don't put the liquid. So it's a drained can of diced tomatoes, and I put about 3 cups of baby spinach. Cook that down until the spinach is wilted and soft, and it won't take long. That spinach, it'll shrink up, and it'll wilt very quickly. Because when you put the 3 cups in it, it pretty much fills up your entire skillet. Starting around a little bit, and all of a sudden, you've got a real manageable amount of spinach. Once that's wilted, season it to your liking with salt and pepper. Then add about a half cup of heavy cream. And then you're going to want to cook about a quarter cup of grated Parmesan cheese. And don't skimp on this. The better the cheese, the better dish is going to be.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Everybody's got that cylinder of cardboard in their refrigerator. But I would encourage you to actually go out and buy a block of Parmesan cheese and grate it yourself. It's so much better. And then do mushrooms. I like mushrooms. About a quarter cup of chopped mushrooms. If you can find some wild mushrooms, that's what I like to use. You might still be able to find some oyster mushrooms, or if you're doing this later on in the year, maybe some chanterelles, which would be really nice because you can, you know, here in South Louisiana, if you can kill a turkey, you know, a couple of months later, the mushrooms pop up in the same area. So you're actually foraging and hunting in the same spot, which is a cool concept.
Nice.
And then some sun-dried tomatoes, about 3 tablespoons of chopped sun-dried tomatoes. Add that to your wilted spinach mixture. You're also going to want to put in, about a half cup of chicken stock. Or if you killed a turkey, you can actually make your own turkey stock, which is really another great way to use the entire bird, using the carcass of the turkey. Once you've got all that incorporated, add back your bacon and your turkey, and then add your pasta. Cook it till it's all combined, and serve it with a piece of garlic bread. And I'm telling you, this is one of my favorite dishes ever. Kind of going back, if you don't have wild mushrooms, obviously you can use a can of, you know, some button mushrooms or some fresh mushrooms from the grocery store. I just enjoy using the wild mushrooms. If you don't have wild turkey, you can use chicken. You can use store-bought turkey. If you're up in the Midwest and you have a couple of pheasants, you can use pheasants instead of the instead of any white meat bird that you have would work just fine.
Man,
the angel hair pasta, you could use maybe a fettuccine if you wanted to. A fettuccine pasta would be good. And of course, like any recipe, this is just a base. If you don't like tomatoes, sun-dried tomatoes, don't put them. If you don't like mushrooms, you don't have to put them. If you don't like spinach, don't put spinach. But, it's always these recipes are always just a baseline, and you can actually, tailor make it to your own likings.
Man, I like Italian food myself. Anything with pasta, angel hair, absolutely a favorite. I make that. I make spaghetti with that. So you said the bacon grease, and that's like it's a great touch. So I had a question about the bacon grease, because I remember my grandparents, my grandmother, using bacon grease, but she had like this tin can on her gas stove. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, Jason.
I have one myself.
Okay. I don't understand. For some reason, every time I try to save the bacon grease, maybe because she used it a lot more than I did, but it would get moldy. Are you supposed to put that in the refrigerator? Just out of curiosity.
Well, I use mine often, so I really don't give mine a chance to do it. What you may end up seeing is that, do you have a strainer on the top of your, are you straining out your bacon grease to where the little bits of bacon aren't getting into it? Because that's probably what's going rancid on you, is the actual meaty part of the bacon. And if you're having issues with it, just put it in the fridge. I mean, it'll solidify. It'll end up being, like the consistency of butter, but it'll last a lot longer for you.
Yeah, I was just thinking about it because I was like thinking my grandmother used to do this like nothing, but hell, she cooked breakfast, lunch, and dinner with it. So, she was anything she can make, eggs with it, fried, and like, but different time. So,
absolutely, it's a different time, and and like you said, she never let it stay around long enough to sour.
Yeah, but. Yeah, I love the idea of using turkey for, and that's funny you say that, because I've actually used duck for Alfredo instead of like chicken Alfredo, duck Alfredo. As a matter of fact, I think I talked to you maybe 2 years ago when I first met you, talked to you about it, and you said you told me about using the rendered duck fat.
Yep.
Yeah, so I think I talked to you about it, man. It came out amazing. But yeah, I think if you find any wild game to substitute a lot of the stuff that we're used to eating, like spaghetti and meatballs or whatever, use spaghetti and venison or whatever.
I'll just garnish it with some basil. And I really like basil. Basil and Italian food are just two great flavors that go well together.
I like that you said that whole cylinder block of Parmesan, actually using the real Parmesan. I love it. I love it. Real Parmesan. We definitely got to get some pictures of this. And for the listeners, if you guys, any of these recipes that Jason is putting out there, please send us some pictures. We want to see how y'all's looks. And we're going to get Joe to send us some pictures so we can make fun of him. But I'm just kidding. But we definitely want to hear what y'all want to hear next as far as like recipes and stuff. Jason's he's like a dictionary. I asked him all kinds of stuff. I think last week I asked him about this biscotta taco stuff, and I asked Joe about it because Joe's he's half Hispanic and he said he's never heard of it, so I guess it's like a Texas thing. So I don't know.
And but. Chris, listen, if any of the listeners want the written copy of this, I have all these written down. So anytime you hear one of the recipes and you want a written copy of it, just hit me up, send me a DM on my, my Facebook or my Instagram page, and I'll be happy to shoot it out to you. I'm very willing to share all this knowledge.
Yeah. And I can contest to that, and look him up on Edible Outdoors Cook on Instagram or Facebook. I mean, he'll definitely reach out to you. I'm actually going to make that today. I don't have any turkey yet, but I'm going to try to use some different game meat. I'll probably do what Joe does, and buy some store-bought turkey.
Yeah. But, now this also works really well with shrimp too. So, if you want a seafood dish, just, at that point, don't cook the shrimp too terribly much, because, it cooks fast. And if you overcook it, it'll turn rubbery on you.
Talking about that, I gotta go down to Louisiana and get some sacks, but I heard they're expensive this season.
Wow, extremely expensive.
So I'm like, but my daughter, she's She wants a crawfish boil, so probably gonna go down there, meet up Joe, get some sacks, and bring it back up here.
But, very good, man. Let me know. I'll try to go meet you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. You have anything else for the listeners, Jason, before we kind of get head out?
That's it.
Hey, Jason, like always, man, I really do appreciate you coming on with these recipes. Again, reach out to him at Jason. Edible Outdoors Cook, or you can look him up, Jason Thornton. I don't know if you can misspell Thornton or Jason. I don't know how many ways you can spell those, but yeah, you probably can, because I can't spell worth a crap. But if you guys have any questions and you can't get a hold of them, reach out to us and we'll get you in contact with them. But like always, y'all have a good one and love Valor, not Bell.